today on Ag News Daily.
Not only is there the carbon benefits, right, just from the basic composition of the product, but there's also basic supply chain benefits because you're having a product that's potentially being produced right down the road from ultimately where it's going to be utilized.
Our core technology is called Bio 800 Plus. It's called Bio 800 Plus because we use over 800 species of bacteria, fungi, amoeba, and protozoa. So everything you'd find in a healthy soil microbiome, we also have food for those microbes. So they then grow at higher populations after you put the seed stock down.
Well, welcome back to the weekly edition of the Ag News Daily Show. It's more than just a podcast now, Delaney.
That's right. It's a video. It's a TikTok. It's an Instagram. It's whatever you want it to be, Tanner.
That's correct. And listeners, we still appreciate the feedback that you're providing us, or watchers. I've got to stop saying just listeners.
That's right. You could be watching it on a phone or a laptop or a tablet. Maybe some folks will be watching us this planting season.
Ooh, that's a good idea, having screen and screen next to your planter monitors.
I like it.
Well, let's jump into weather. April started off and Mother Nature brought us everything but the kitchen sink. A multi-day system will slide across much of the country and bring the potential for tornadoes, large hail, flooding, and even snow. As if that weren't enough, Delaney, there could also be record warm temperatures. So we'll continue to keep an eye on the widespread precipitation that is expected as the very large system will traverse the central United States on Sunday and into the northeast by midweek next week. Snow and freezing rain will fall to the north, while the heavy rain and severe thunderstorms will unfold on the warmer side of the system. April is traditionally when severe thunderstorm activity begins to ramp up. More than half of the tornadoes in an average year occur from April through June, according to the Storm Prediction Center. But Delaney, on Monday, April 8th, we will have the day turn to night as a total solar eclipse will move across North America. The path of totality line from Texas to Maine will be where the moon completely blocks out the sun, approximately 108 to 122 miles wide, according to NASA. But the entire continental United States will experience at least a partial eclipse. The totality will last 4 minutes and 28 seconds as it enters Texas around 1:30 p.m. Central Standard Time, and 3 minutes and 21 seconds as it exits Maine nearly an hour later. The entire experience from beginning to end for the partial eclipse will be about 2 hours and 20 minutes long. Some farmers have taken advantage of being in the path of totality and turned the eclipse into a niche market, Delaney, for their business. For example, Stuckey Farm in Sheridan, Indiana, is hosting a 1980s-themed Total Eclipse of My Farm event, complete with boombox, bounce houses, music, and a market where attendees can buy souvenirs, food items from their farm. Admission there is $18 and includes a pair of eclipse viewing glasses. I tell you what, anyone in the path of totality should be aware of the timing and the influx of people to observe it. Stay safe and have a good understanding of the trespassing laws in your area there.
Tanner, I don't know if it's going to come across here, Iowa, or not.
No, we will be in a partial viewing stage.
But excited, baby, man.
That's correct. But my kids are looking forward to it.
Well, it's a fun a way to celebrate with the Sheridan Farms party that they mentioned there, Tanner. But this may not be the most ideal time to plant your crops if you've got that total eclipse coming through your area there. But growers last week across many states kicked off planting season as we officially received our first weekly crop progress report from the USDA. As of March 31st, 2% of our nation's corn crop has gone in the ground. 6 of the 18 major corn-growing states made some progress, including farmers in Illinois, Kansas, Kentucky, Missouri, Tennessee, and Texas. Texas, most notably, is already 57% planted.
Wow.
So we also received some updated winter wheat progress, which is headed in 3 of the top 18 states. 56% of the crop in good to excellent condition, 33% in fair condition, and 11% in very poor to poor conditions. We also saw about 1% of the nation's spring wheat go in the ground as well. Tanner, how far out do you think your folks are from starting planting?
Well, I think there's some patience, but I would say about a week away is both sides of the family would be.
I think we're about 10 to 15 days. Mm-hmm. Planters are ready to roll. Everybody's getting itchy.
That's right. Well, there's some new technology that's being unveiled. AGCO acquired a majority stake in Trimble, kicking off their joint venture under the PTX Trimble name. AGCO acquired 85% stake in Trimble, with Trimble retaining the 15% stake. They financed the transaction through $1.1 billion in recently issued secured senior unsecured notes and a $500 million term loan. and use some rest of the cash on hand. Trimble's portfolio contains technologies not only in agriculture, but also construction, transportation, and geospatial mapping. PTX Trimble is intended to take their portfolio of products and accelerate AGCO's pace of innovation with technology like guidance, autonomy, precision planting, and be connected to the farming sustainability community. The president and chairman for AGCO said PTX Trimble will provide farmers greater access to next-generation precision ag tools, no matter what brands of tractors and implements that they operate. We've had a lot more focus on North America and the farmer segment there with row crops. We look forward to seeing further updates coming from this release in the upcoming months, Delaney.
We certainly do, Tanner, but we saw a pretty big major event earlier this week in Taiwan. Record headlines here as Taiwan had a huge earthquake. In fact, their worst earthquake since 1999. Now, the magnitude reported on the Richter scale, I had to look up what that scale was, but it was a 7 on the scale, which quantifies it as a major event. There could be some huge economic implications here moving forward, in addition to, of course, the humanitarian issues. But Taiwan is a major player in the global chip sector and the world's largest chip maker, Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Co., was reportedly forced to evacuate and shut down some plants and facilities to inspect the damage, at least temporarily. Now, this company makes a variety of different chips, but some of those key application uses include agricultural uses, Tanner. So it might be a little bit of a slow but downstream effect here.
Well, this has given me flashbacks to vehicles not getting chips during the pandemic.
That's a good point, too.
Well, CHS and Growmark won't pursue new collaborations after ongoing formal discussions into a potential merger or other joint business ventures started here at the beginning of 2024. A CHS spokesperson told DTN that the exploratory conversations have concluded and it was determined that no new opportunities will be pursued at this time. CHS and Growmark have had longstanding relationships together. The CHS and Growmark announced that these discussions started at the beginning of January and were fully transparent with the cooperative's members and owners. At the time, CHS spokesperson said the organizations were exploring all options from maintaining the status quo to a complete merger. The two companies did form a $50 million venture capital fund called the Cooperative Ventures back in 2021 to support the advancements in agricultural technologies. The fund has invested in Earth Optics, a soil data measurement and mapping company, and Sabanto, a hardware and software company developing autonomous capabilities in tractors. So we're glad that we got a little clarity coming out of those discussions, Delaney, but I think those are two ag tech companies that might be worth getting on for an interview to check on the status of what those funds were used for.
That's a very good point, Tanner. Hadn't thought of that. But we've got some exciting interviews coming up here in the episode in just a little bit. But as we continue to look at fresh news surrounding influenza, a human case was reported earlier this week. This is the second case that has ever been reportedly contracted by a human. We've also seen more dairy herds reported fresh outbreaks in Texas, Kansas, Idaho, Michigan, and New Mexico, the latest toll accounting for the flu in 12 dairies across the states. Ohio also appears to have a herd exhibiting symptoms, but that case has yet to be confirmed. Cal-Maine Foods, the largest egg producer in the country, has temporarily halted egg production at one of their Texas facilities due to the ongoing threat in the state. The company also stated they culled just over 3.5% of their total flock over the last month after a facility in Palmer County, Texas, tested positive. Now, since February of 2022, Tanner, avian influenza has killed nearly 84 million birds in domestic flocks, mostly in egg-laying hens and turkeys, but that is quite a bit more extreme than what we saw back in 2015.
Yeah, that seems like a large number. We'll continue to keep an eye on that and probably get more updates. But right now, the nation's leading brewer is selling beer cans with tractors, corn cobs, and other campaigns in the past, has announced another step forward to support U.S. farmers, which came out during National Ag Week a couple weeks ago. The American Farmland Trust launched its new U.S. farmland certification and packaging seal for products that are derived from at least 95% of their ag ingredients from farms right here in the United States. Anheuser-Busch announced that it'll be the first to adopt the U.S. farmed certification and seal for several of its beer brands. This seal aims to transform the way consumers shop domestically and source their products, and will first appear on what can, do you think, Delaney?
The
Busch Light beer can in May. Anheuser-Busch's new campaign, Choose Beer, Grown Here, will encourage consumers to seek the certification and seal when shopping for their products. Also, Budweiser, Bud Light, Michelob Ultra cans will get the same marking and have obtained the U.S. Farm Certification later down the road, but the first can will be Busch Light.
Seems like they're really doing some work here to rebuild that farming community brand.
I like what they're doing.
Well, earlier this week, Landis highlighted some big partnerships at a few different events geared at the media and farmers alike. Back in June of 2023, Landis announced plans to build a $16 million fertilizer manufacturing and repackaging facility in Boone, Iowa. The partnership, struck with Talus Renewables, aims to regionalize farmers' access to fertilizer, specifically ammonia needed for anhydrous. Through their containerized systems, Talus Ag touts being the world's first modular green ammonia system, which enables local production of low-cost, carbon-free fertilizers and renewable fuels. At the media event earlier this week, I sat down with Elizabeth Burns-Thompson, head of external affairs for Landis, to discuss this partnership and other focuses for the Landis Cooperative. Elizabeth, super excited to have you on the podcast today.
Yes, happy to be here.
So for those of our listeners that have kind of followed along with your professional journey, you were at Navigator CO2, made the jump recently here to Landis. Talk to us about what that big change has been like for you.
Sure. So, as you mentioned, I've been very fortunate to wear a lot of different hats throughout the ag community, all of them kind of in different ways, shape, or form, connected to agriculture more directly or a little bit more tangentially. But back in December, had the opportunity to join the team here at Landis. Very familiar with the folks here. Uniquely, I've also worked in the biodiesel space, so Renewable Energy Group, which was an offshoot of West Central Co-op, which, as many may know, was one of the founding entities that created Landis here many years ago. So for those of the younger listeners out there that are curious kind of how careers come together, you just never know where the world's going to take you. But what's really exciting, so as you mentioned, external affairs, half of that, I would say I'm working on kind of the PR space, so making sure that we're building out more kind of boots on the ground relationships in the communities that we operate in, building out that community and civic participation as well. Additionally, kind of, I'd say the other half is that traditional policy space. So I've been out to DC a couple times already in this role, some with our partner associations and organizations that we work with, but also just kind of promoting and educating on what Landis is and what we're working towards. Obviously, also here in Des Moines at the state capitol throughout the legislative session, and we're really prioritizing being more involved locally. And so I think you'll see more of us at those local city council meetings, the county boards of supervisors, really local involvement as well, because as we know, every piece of the governmental ladder is important, all the way from DC to your neighborhoods.
And really getting to kind of wear both of those hats, you maybe have the best of both worlds with having still that policy thing, which I know definitely has held a lot of weight in your career. But part of your role, as you mentioned, is focusing on kind of those boots on the ground approaches, making sure that the programs Landis is pulling forward for farmers really make sense at that farm gate level. Talk to us a little bit about this maybe somewhat newer focus on innovation within the partnerships that Landis approaches.
Sure. So I think we look at a lot of the things that are coming down the hopper. Traditionally, is it the carrot? Is it the stick? Excuse me. From a regulatory perspective, right? Are there incentives and/or are people being regulated to do things? I think what we're trying to do is get ahead of the curve and put solutions forward. One of the topics that was talked about today specifically was green ammonia. The interplay of that into the whole kind of carbon conversation is incredible. Just at the foundational perspective of CI, carbon intensity is being talked about everywhere, both from a regulatory perspective in some places throughout the United States and or around the world, but then also building out to capture incentives, be it downstream, right? We've talked about tax credits and compliance programs and things like that, but what we're doing is trying to pull that all the way back, not even back, but all throughout the entirety of the supply chain to make sure that the farmer has a foot in that space and a very valuable footing. And just at the sheer foundation of it, from a carbon intensity, especially in corn, your nitrogen fertilizer is your biggest piece, or fertilizer in general is the biggest piece of that carbon scoring. And so when you're looking at the overall carbon score, both of the crop itself, but also that end product, whatever that bushel of grain goes into, be it a T-bone or a gallon of ethanol, that carbon valuation carries all the way through. And so we're trying to pull forward tools that help participate in those and show, in concept, bringing that all the way to reality out on the farm. So mm-hmm. it's really exciting to be able to not only go to Washington, D.C. and talk about that with our federal delegation and how that may potentially have interplay into a farm bill, should we see a new one. Again, that maybe is a topic for another conversation. But then also all the way down to the local level, right? So what does the development of a talus-based project look like, maybe for a county on a property tax valuation, or what that can bring in additional sales tax revenue and things like that? Because there's, again, value not only just to the farmers, but throughout that. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, throughout the entire supply chain. I'm a little tongue-twisted today.
Okay, so you specifically talked about the ammonia focus, mm-hmm. the fertilizer focus. We heard some exciting news at the Landis Media event earlier this week talking about the partnership with Talus, mm-hmm. which is, I'm just fascinated by the partnership, the process that they've introduced. Give us kind of the 10,000-foot overview of how this partnership came to be and what is the focus of this partnership with Talus?
Sure. So again, I think a lot of the conversation is around carbon. How do we be competitive in a carbon kind of ecosystem that we are existing in? And farmers are a key part of that, not just the end processors. And so what I'm most excited about with the Talus partnership, that starts with the demonstration project that we have in Boone. I'm really excited to be able to hopefully showcase that as part of the Farm Progress Show, as well as hopefully a ribbon cutting yet later this year. And then also those additional build out facilities that we're partnering with further up into Northern Iowa, and hopefully even broader throughout kind of the greater Corn Belt. But again, what that ultimately will do, and I think kind of first of its kind, is to look at the pie again of what goes into a carbon score, the biggest piece of that being fertilizer, and we're taking that and saying we have found you a partner that can drive that score down significantly. And that has value to that farmer. It also has that value follows that product all throughout the supply chain. So now that bushel is not only more valuable to the farmer, it's more valuable to every potential marketplace that farmer can sell that bushel into. Again, be it the low carbon T-bone of tomorrow, and or the low carbon fuel of ethanol, or the low carbon other product. You know, I flash back to my time at the Corn Growers. I think it was 4,000 products that we turned corn into. And so, you know, that carbon valuation carries into all of those end marketplaces.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned the Boone facility, because like you said, really at the end of the day, it's how do we lower our carbon CI score? And so Talus is doing this really through more regionalized, or kind of pulling the supply chain back for mm-hmm. the fertilizer space. We see a lot of fertilizer products today, especially NH3, coming from maybe Russia or China. Talus has found a new way to kind of make it more of a localized place, and the first location here in the United States is going to be in Boone, Iowa, mm-hmm. which is really going to culminate here at the Farm Progress Show.
Absolutely. And I think, think back to 2020 when supply chain constraints and, you know, it just the logistics really got challenging. I think that also opened eyes to we've got to find ways to pull production more local. You know, we talk about buying local, you know, supporting local, pulling things back into rural, and this is really showcasing that we can begin to pull some of those critical inputs onto our operations local as well, right? That's something you see in a lot of different aspects that we deal with from other parts of commerce. It makes sense to apply that in agriculture. So not only is there the carbon benefits, right, just from the basic composition of the product, but there's also, you know, basic supply chain benefits, because you're having a product that's coming, you know, potentially being produced right down the road from ultimately where it's going to be utilized.
Yeah, and it was great to hear the CEO of Talus Hero here mm-hmm. earlier this week in Des Moines, Iowa, talking about the system, because there's really two different types of system. Either they're containerized mm-hmm. systems, which I think in itself is, mm-hmm. you know, very sustainable and kind of eco-friendly. Mm-hmm. But there are the two systems are either going to be a 400 ton per year site or anywhere from 5,000 to 6,000 tons per year. So really focusing on kind of growing that local community, 20 to 30 farmers, where those sites will go, will be able to pull from these facilities, which I think speaks really loudly to the overall mission of sustainability. starting to roll this out. I know it's very new, but what have some of the early reactions been from the farmers that you have talked about this project with?
Sure. So I think farmers are excited. We have lawmakers. In fact, we had an event in this building here earlier this week with many of the lawmakers up from the State House. Talis was part of the demonstration that we had there. So kind of showcasing a little bit about what this means about, you know, coming down the road. Folks are excited to see it, and I think it's something that maybe a lot of people can't conceptualize until you actually see it in action, to think that you can take energy and air and water and turn it into a valuable product that we already utilize today, but in a different fashion. It's innovative, and I think seeing can be believing, and so I'm looking forward to helping showcase that, not only to those that are going to be utilizing the product and or kind of directly connected to it, but it's really exciting to take the opportunity to showcase it to, you know, lawmakers that may represent downtown Des Moines or downtown Cedar Rapids or Council Bluffs, maybe, you know, that don't have an agricultural footprint, an agricultural background, but they're curious about what's happening in sustainability, that's happening in, you know, environmental initiatives. And we can showcase that this is a piece of the pie that farmers are stepping up and making commitments and then following through on them with projects like this. And it's coming to fruition, right? We're not just talking about it anymore. We're actually doing it.
Well, we know that Talis is not the only partnership that Landis is focused on here. Talk to us about how does Landis go about deciding, you know, putting the farmer at the center of the model. How do they go about deciding what companies or partnerships make sense for the farmers within the Landis Cooperative?
Sure. I think it starts with, you know, listening to what the challenges are, right? Not only the challenges that are being faced today, but where we see opportunities. You know, I would always argue that a challenge is just an opportunity with a different coat on. And the inverse is true, right? But we are looking at ways to try to proactively identify where there's opportunities coming down the hopper and bring those source technologies that can match up with those. So, right, the conversations around carbon have been going around for years. There's still a lot of confusion about where all the dust will settle in that space. But we know that we want our farmers to be the first to market and to be the most competitive in that place. And so bringing forward things like Talis, there are other things that I think are also incredibly important, not only to a farmer's financial bottom line, but you'll hear us talk about Atlantis, the overall vitality of both our farmers and our communities that we operate in. And, so that's something that I also am working on very diligently is we take a very kind of big picture approach to the financial bottom line is incredibly important, right? Sustainability of a farm is a business, right? Landis is a business. The financial longevity is important, but that's only one piece of the pie. We have to have other pieces that truly create vitality. And so that's why we are going out and looking at solutions like healthcare, like critical resources to keep communities afloat. And many of the places that we have locations, we are the largest entity in that town. In some cases, we may be the only business in that town. And so how do you make sure that even in those places that there's still a quality of life, that there's access to critical resources like healthcare, like education? One example that was brought up to me the other day is by a farmer is, you know, their local CPA retired. Mm. They have to now drive 45 minutes to find somebody that can do their taxes for them. And so, you know, things like that begin to winnow out, the dying of small communities, I think, has that kind of feeling of being kind of contagious or the rolling effect. That can work the other way too, right? Positivity and growth builds on itself. And so we're trying to find ways to help build that positivity, that growth to revive many of these rural communities too.
Fantastic. Well, it sounds like a lot of exciting things are ahead for Landis and hopefully for you as well. But we certainly appreciate you joining us on the podcast
today. It's always good to visit with you, Delaney.
Well, thanks for getting that interview, Delaney. Appreciate you taking time to do that. Nationwide, the sales of E15 rose 8% to a record 1.1 billion gallons in 2023, thanks to competitive prices and the growing number of stations that will actually sell the fuel. This is data according to the Renewable Fuels Association, or the RFA. A key reason why the average E15 volume per station has increased over the last 5 years is that sales have now been allowed during the summer months in some of these only conventional gasoline areas of the past. RFA noted that there are no official statistics in the U.S. for E15 volumes, but national sales can be estimated using Minnesota and Iowa data, given that those two states account for nearly 30% of all the U.S. stations offering E15. RFA estimated national sales by multiplying the count of U.S. E15 stations by the average estimated volume per station in our two states, Iowa and Minnesota, and took that over the course of 2022 and 2023 and saw that that's where that 8% growth came from. So a nice little bump in our sales there, Delaney.
Well, Tanner, this might win headline of the week. Earlier this week, Pioneer announced an iconic partnership with NFL quarterback Brock Purdy. Did you see that one, Tim?
I did. We need to get Brock on.
I know. Well, following that announcement, the Pioneer X channel blew up, Tanner. But that was kind of a fun one there to see kick off earlier this year.
Well, Barrett Ersk with Holganics is not Brock Purdy, but I still will not let you wonder just how great this interview is. So let's get into that from Commodity Classic right now. So tell our listeners a little bit about who Holganics is.
Yeah, so Holganics, we're a biological company. We help anybody who grows anything grow it more efficiently. Functionally, we help drive healthy soil, and healthy soil creates healthier plants that need less fertilizer, and we typically get better yields.
That's great.
Barrett, I was really interested to learn you had actually gotten your start in the turf space first about almost 15 years ago before transitioning into agriculture in 2018. What similarities did you see between turf and agriculture that helped lend itself to that transition?
So we started off in turf grass space. I've been in turf my whole life. So that's when I founded this company. That's where the logical place to start for me was. We were on over 700 golf courses across the country, a bunch of NFL, MLB, grass you see on TV, lawn care companies, that type of thing. At the end of the day, whether it's turf grass or row crop, we're just trying to create a healthier, more functional soil to grow healthier plants. In turf grass specifically, there's a lot of regulations around phosphorus restriction, how much nitrogen we could apply around specific waterways. Chesapeake Bay Watershed would be a big example of that. And so we founded this company to try to help turf grass professionals get what they needed to get for their clients, that green, healthy, weed-free turf, while using less fertilizer so they could deal with the regulations that were hitting the turf grass space. We're starting to see those regulations hit certain markets in row crop, so it's a great opportunity for us to move into row crop and help the agricultural community do the same thing we've been doing with turf, for many years.
So how has the ag community adopted Holganics? Is the adoption rate pretty well?
Yeah, it's been pretty exciting. We started in 2010 with that turf business, as we talked about. 2015, we started doing formulation work for agriculture and trial work. 2018, we did our first commercial acres in row crop. 2018, we were on, 75,000 acres, and, we were happy to get started.
Oh, yeah.
And this year, we're going to be on 2.5 million acres.
Wow.
So when you look at that growth rate, we're growing our ag acres about 2.5 times every year. And what's really cool about that is 93% of our customers buy from year one to year two to year three. High retention rate. We also get customers to start off with a portion of their farm, and over that journey, we get more and more of their farm. So that really helps us add acres while we continue to add new customers as well.
That's right.
I think that's always an interesting to note is the transition of biological adoption on the farm, because we've talked to farmers who maybe will test a few products here in year one and aren't willing to transition all of their acres to biologicals, but then it sounds like really they're weeding it out pretty quickly on in their testing to say which ones are working and which ones aren't. So talk to us a little bit about some of that adoption process that you've seen farmers have with Holganics.
Yeah, so what we like to do is get a farmer to use us on a portion of their farm. Don't give us your whole farm year one. We want to prove to you that we can actually help you make more money, produce higher yields while using less inputs, and along the way improve your soil health. So if we can't do that, we don't have the right to be on your farm the following year. And we put our money where our mouth is, because we come out and we do testing mid-season. We'll come out with, we've tailgate style tests. So we use things like the microbiometer, Crystal Labs probe, to actually do real-time soil tests mid-season to show that farming customer that this is where they put the product and how did the soil improve. We got improved organic matter, we've got improved CEC, we've improved water filtration, and if we can show them the data that, look, a single application applied in the springtime has actually given us these real measurable soil health improvements, we're doing our job. And then, of course, at the end of the year, we see yield, and we help them understand where they put it, and hopefully we get a yield bump as well that puts money back in that farmer's pocket. As long as we do that, we get the right to come back next year.
So you're saying more yield with less money spent.
That's right.
That almost sounds too good to be true. So how are you working with the bacteria and the microbes that are already in the soil?
Yeah, so what's really important with Holganics, and look, there's a lot of microbials out there, and it's hard to tell one from the other. With Holganics, we're different. I like to say we're different than any other microbial, and it comes down to biodiversity. Okay. Our core technology is called Bio 800 Plus. Yep. It's called Bio 800 Plus because we use over 800 species of bacteria, fungi, amoeba, and protozoa. So everything you'd find in a healthy soil microbiome, we have in a highly concentrated form that's stabilized that goes into the soil. And when it goes into the soil, we also have food for those microbes, so they then grow at higher populations after you put the seed stock down. And so at the end of the day, you've got the fungi and the bacteria and the protozoa are all working together to help improve nutrient cycling. So look, we're used to, as corn, a lot of corn growers are putting down a pound of nitrogen per bushel of corn that they're trying to produce. Well, the removal rate on corn is only 0.6 pounds of nitrogen per bushel of corn. So we actually only need 0.6 bushels. But we need to put a pound down because a lot of it's not going to the plant because it's not very efficient. So what we can do is help get closer to that 0.6 by making sure that the fertilizer you do apply goes to the plant because we have the microbes there to sequester the nitrogen and then the other microbes there to eat the sequestering microbes and convert them into a form that the plant can use. We also help pull phosphorus out of the soil with phosphorus-solubilizing microbes and we do the same for potassium. So if we can make the engine of the soil being the engine to the plant, if we can make it run more efficiently, more the fertilizer we're going to apply is going to get to the plant, so we don't need as much.
That's great. Delaney, I think we need Holganics to make a product for podcast audiences to be able to put that natural environment together that'll grow on its own.
I like it. Vera, as you think about application for your products that you mentioned, 800 of those little suckers are going in. Is it an in-furrow application time? Is it a foliar application time? When are farmers looking to apply this?
Yeah, so we have two products. Both are within the Bio 800 technology, but they're different formulations of the Bio 800 technology. So one product we use at springtime, we put it down at planting or as close to planting as practical. Half a gallon an acre in furrow is fine. We can also do over the top. So it doesn't matter to us whether you're going to put it over the top or put it in furrow. Put it down as close to seeding as practical. We like to say at seeding or 2 weeks before or 2 weeks after, but within a 2 weeks plus or minus of planting. That's going to help us with germination. We'll see earlier rooting, better germination. We see much more fibrous and denser roots as the season goes on. That formulation is designed for a much more efficient nutrient uptake because we're usually applying a starter fertilizer. We can also mix it with a pre or post herbicide. So it mixes with anything but a fungicide. Put it right down whenever you're going to do your spray pass anyway. And then we have a fall product that is designed, it's the same 800 species, but we elevate the populations of the degraders. So some of the populations of the 800 are really good at fertilizer efficiency and rooting. Some of them are really good at degrading plant cellulose material. Mm-hmm. So we have a fall product that you put down post-harvest, and it's really good at chewing up stubble and stover and converting it into humus, releasing nutrients back into the soil, making it easier for the planter to go through in the spring. So you apply this in the spring, apply this in the fall, and all along the way we're going to continue to improve soil health and make that engine to the plant much more efficient.
Well, you know, it's not just about yield, which I know at the end of the day, calculating ROI yield is one of the easiest ways to do that. But it's also to your point there about plant health, soil health. And so I think there's a lot of added benefits, it sounds like, outside of just yield that farmers are going to see by using Holganics.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, look, we all want to get higher yield. It's fun to talk about yield. But, you know, there's a numerator and a denominator that goes into the profit per acre on your farm. So one way to get more profit is to have better yield. One way to get more profit is to have less inputs. We help the farmer do both. But also, we're going to help that plant survive any stressful condition much better. So deeper, thicker roots. We typically see 4 to 10 times more weighable root mass. That plant is going to sustain a drought better with better roots. It's going to sustain wind and hail than you know, if we didn't have those roots. Also, those roots, after you cut the stalks, they stay in the ground, and with the right microbes, they turn into humus, which improves organic matter. Roots also explore more of the soil, give us help to reduce compaction, help water filtration. So we're going to help everything along the way. We're going to make you more money this year as a farmer, but we're also going to improve your soil health each year you use the product, which is important for legacy. I mean, if you're a multi-generational farmer, you want to pass this farm down in better condition than you inherited it. We want to help you do that.
So as our listeners love examples, do you have any clients that have seen extreme success with your products?
Oh, sure. We've got a bunch of clients, and we wouldn't have, you know, that repeat business if we didn't. But, you know, one just to use as an example, John Nelson. John's been a great customer out of South Dakota, and John's used the product over a course of 4 years.
Okay.
And what's really cool is if you look at his aerophotography of his farm, and you can see how it's improved year over year. You got, you know, much less of the reds and the yellows,
right,
more of the greens every year, so you can see it. But along the way, John has significantly reduced his fertilizer inputs.
Good.
So not day one, but over the course of 4 years, he continued to reduce his fertilizer to the point now where he was at 1.1 units of nitrogen per bushel corn. He's now down to that 0.66
wow.
range, and he got there over time. Another cool thing about John is and John's a really humble guy, and if he hears this, he's going to be embarrassed, but I love to brag about John, because John this year, he won for his state the soybean contest on dry land soybean.
Oh, wow.
His county average is 38 bushel. He got 82 bushel.
Wow.
And he did so with zero nutrient, using Holganics as his primary nutrient by getting the nutrient out of the soil.
Well, that's a pretty good testament. So if our listeners want to look up Holganics and learn more about this for themselves, how is it best that they do this?
Yeah, go to www.holganics, HOLGANIX.com. We've got all the information there for you. We've got webinars that you can, links to webinars, links to tutorials, customer videos. Give us a call. We'd love to talk to you. We'll come out and see you on the farm.
Yeah, I know we could talk for hours, but that's the time we have today. So thanks for coming and hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you. It was a lot of fun. Appreciate it.
Well, Holganics certainly has been making some big waves, Tanner, here over the last year plus. But let's get into some headlines making waves in the commodity markets. After a meeting of top OPEC Plus ministers this week, they decided to keep oil supply policy unchanged and pressed some countries to increase compliance with output cuts. This news earlier this week spurred international crude prices to their highest level in 5 months, peaking at just over $90 a barrel. That bird flu case that we announced earlier this week contracted in a human caused June live cattle to trade the limit down on Monday, following Monday's session. Contracts traded sideways here after those big losses early in the week. But following last week's prospective plantings report, the funds continue to maintain their big short position and even slightly increase that net short position in CBOT corn futures.
That's right. And new crop corn saw a choppy trade this week, as it appeared not much could push the market one way or the other. Thursday's weekly corn export sales for the week ending March 28th were on the lower end of trade expectations. Even with the announcement of fresh corn export sales to Mexico on Thursday of just over 152,000 metric tons, soybean export sales were also nothing to write home about, coming in at the lowest total in 5 weeks and well below trade expectations as well. Beans also saw choppy trade action this week as the bulls and bears continued to duke it out, Delaney.
That's right. And heading into Friday's opening session, old and new crop corn futures were a few cents higher on the board, soybeans trading a few cents lower. But that's a quick look at this week's market headlines, Tanner.
That's right. So I still think we're getting the hang of this. I appreciate the listeners and watchers for hanging out with us. But like today, I played with a twisty tie. It's the whole, I just don't know what to do with my hands yet.
Well, we'll figure it out. We'll keep working with you.
We appreciate the feedback. We also appreciate the connections to interviews. And if one of you are close to Brock Purdy, we're in the market for an interview. We'll just take 15 minutes.
Yeah, no more than 15 minutes. He'd be a pretty good one, fun one to have on. Maybe we can get him if he's coming up here to help with his in-laws planting season. He can swing by the studio, do a quick interview, and be on his way.
That's right. And then go put some Pioneer seeds in the ground. Well, this is another great week, Delaney, and I think our listeners are ready to wrap it up. So what do you say? Should we let them go?
Let's let them go.